the Bible. And the best thing that happens in your life is you start having a collection of favorite verses. When you grow a little bit, you start to expand in your understanding of Scripture, and you might have favorite stories. We're quite a different level tonight than either one of those. That's what happens your first year to 5 years of your Christian life. So what we're going to talk about tonight is something simple. Are you ready for this? This story began when the people of Israel required a king in 1 Samuel. They got a king named... He didn't work out so well. God then chose a different king. He chose a guy by the name of... Let me see if I can remember his name. David. From 1 Samuel 16 and 17, all the way to where we're at, there's only one question being answered. How will David become the king? And he answers it over and over and over and over. David will not do what other people do to become king, which is kill the previous king. Look at me. Kill his family. Kill his children. He's proved it over and over and over. You come to 2 Samuel 6 with almost not a blemish on David's name, with exception of one. He has a problem with a few too many wives. But that's it. David has not done wrong. Chapter 7 is the highest point in David's life, the Davidic covenant. I saw 2 weeks ago on PBS Moshe Dayan. Some of you are way too young to know that name. In 1967, when he went into Jerusalem and they took the Wailing Wall for the first time since AD 70. He's praying and shouting in Hebrew, but I understand enough that he's talking about King Daud, David. So this is not small potatoes for a Jewish person, and frankly for a Christian, because Jesus is Son of David, Son of Abraham. But we're going to talk tonight, and the title is not a joke. So you think you can dance? When we walk out of here tonight, I only want you to ask yourself, not me. This isn't about Pastor Warren. So you think you can dance? I want you to ask yourself that question. You'll realize I'm not talking about dancing as Frenchie thinks. Let's all stand now. 2 Samuel 6 and verse 10, would you? This is the conclusion of the first part of the story. So David would not remove the ark of the Lord unto him, unto the city of David. But David carried it aside into the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite. And the ark of the Lord continued in the house of Obed-Gittite 3 months. And the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all his household. Boy, those are some names. I stumbled around over those. So it was there 3 months. Verse 12 is the turning point. And it was told King David, saying, the Lord hath blessed the house of Obed-Edom and all that pertaineth unto him because of the ark of God. So David went and brought up the ark of God from the city of Obed-Edom, or from the house of Obed-Edom, into the city of David with what? This is a great time, folks. I mean, this is going to be one of the most beautiful stories, but I'm going to ask you this question. So you think you can dance? This is not a joke. Because one of the apexes of David's life becomes one of his downfalls. We continue. And it was so that when they bare the ark of the Lord, they that bare the ark of the Lord, they carried it, had gone 6 paces, he sacrificed oxen and fatlings. And David, what? He danced Lifnei Yahweh. Two of the most beautiful Hebrew words, before the Lord, before specifically the face of the Lord, with all his might. And David was girded with a linen ephod. It's really hard to know exactly what that is. There's a lot of discussion. Let's just leave it at this. David was not fully clothed like a king would be clothed. He had a lot less clothes on. He wasn't naked, but he wasn't wearing all of his finery. Verse 15. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the trumpet. And as the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michal, Saul's daughter, looked through windows and saw King David leaping and... The only two times that Hebrew word is used in all the Bible, you just read both of them. In the passage, dancing does not mean a formal dance or an informal dance. It means jumping in the air and twirling. Have you ever seen somebody real excited? That's what it is. That's all this really is. He's jumping and spinning. Now, Frenchie, don't try it because we'd have to take you to the hospital. All right, let's continue looking. So Saul's daughter, Michal, looked through a window and saw David leaping and dancing. Where? Lifnei Yahweh, before the face of the Lord. This ain't no joke, folks. David was doing right before the watching God. And what does Michal do? She despised him in her heart. And they brought in the ark of the Lord and set it in his place in the midst of the tabernacle that David had pitched for it. And David offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And as soon as David had made an end of burnt offerings and peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of hosts. And he dealt among all the people, even among the whole multitude of Israel, as well to the women as men, to everyone. And you have phrases. If you're reading a modern version, it might be somewhat different than this. And I'm going to say this quickly. I'm not going to explain all of this stuff. Have you ever tried to explain to somebody the difference between a boiled egg and a poached egg that's never seen either one? Sometimes you see things in the Bible that are so commonplace that they're not commonplace to us. Some people maybe have never had a poached egg. I have not had a poached egg, I don't think, since I was a child. So how would I explain a poached egg to somebody? I know there is such a thing. Sometimes you hear these phrases and the different versions translate them differently only because they are so common that they didn't think about explaining them. How's that sound? All right, we continue. So it goes on to say, but the most important thing is David gave sacrifices. David blessed the people in the name of the Lord. And probably the priests were there too, I'm assuming. And then David said, we're going to give the people, it's going to be like a fiesta. It's going to be like a celebration. Everybody's going to have food, cake of bread, good piece of flesh, flagon of wine. Who knows what all this is? So all the people departed, everyone to his house. And then David returned to bless his household, of course. Well, yeah, he's going home himself. And Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, and folks, if you can think of the most sarcastic way you could ever read this, this is what you should do. How glorious. I can't even do it. Rolando, your son, did it in the play. When he was being whiny, I'm thinking he didn't have to practice that. He knew how to be whiny. You know, there are some people that know how to be snarky. Suplada. I don't know what other term to use. You know, some people can just do it. When she was saying this, this was nasty, snarky, sarcastic. How glorious was the king of Israel today, who uncovered himself today in the eyes of the handmaidens of his servants. She was saying, you did all of this so the other women would look at you. Look at me in the eyes. He did this before God. And she's taking the most holy thing he could do and saying, you did this so women would look at you. Are you awake out there? I'm going to ask you a question. So you think you can dance? If you think so, whatever you do for the Lord, I'll get to this later, somebody will come along with a knife that long and stick it straight in your heart. Are you hearing me? They will question the most holy things you ever do. Well, that's what she did. Who uncovered himself today in the eyes of the handmaidens of his servants as one of the vain fellows, shamelessly uncovered himself. And David started out well in his reply. It was before the Lord. It gets a little worse immediately because he goes after her now. You see what happens when you criticize. What is the tendency? To pay back in kind. He goes on to say, by the way, it was before the Lord. That's good. which chose me before your old man. And before, by the way, all his house. You know your house, Michael? To appoint me ruler over the people of the Lord, over Israel. Therefore, I'll do this. I'll play before the Lord. And I will yet be more vile than thus. We have now descended into the pigsty, David. We're no longer on the mountaintop. We're down in the muck. I'll be honest with you. I don't know exactly what verse 22 means. Some people speculate. But it almost sounds like he's saying, you know, you think I've made myself vile. I will make myself vile in the future. Did he make himself vile in the future? I will yet be more vile than thus, and will be base in my own sight, and of the maiden servants which thou hast spoken of them shall I be had in honor. That is an arrogant male, yes or no? And then you have this little conclusion, and I don't have time to talk about it. It's one of those, oh, by the way, Michael didn't ever have children. Wonder why? Bitterness? No relationship with David? So, we're going to pray. We're going to zoom through this. I'm going to ask a question. So, you think you can dance? No matter what you do, by the way, this is what bothers me about lazy people with no character and no drive. You're going to be criticized for being worthless. You might as well be criticized for not being worthless. You might as well do something. People are going to criticize you no matter what. At least it'd be for something worthwhile. We're going to look at this question, so you think you can dance. This will be a very easy sermon until the second half, and then the second half, it'll be yours. Because frankly, this isn't about me, it's about you tonight. So you think you can dance? Let's pray. Father, thank you for this night. May you open our eyes and hearts to this text. There's a lot of good things that can be said here, but there is some real tragedy just building up inside of David that we're going to see bear fruition in years to come. Because somebody has challenged him at the point of his most sacred activities. Bless now, I ask, and I ask that you would help me as I speak tonight in Christ's name. Amen. You may be seated. We're going to get to your notes very quickly. I'll begin by simply doing this. When I was in Bible college many years ago, a young man, similar age to me, graduated the year before I did with his undergrad, and I was getting my master's the following year, so we probably graduated about the same year. He was not an exceptional guy. He was a decent guy, very decent guy, honorable guy, godly guy, and he wanted to be in the ministry. He graduated. I never forget when he graduated, and he was well known around campus. He was a married guy. He got married somewhere in there. He was known as being perfectionistic. Do we have any perfectionistic people in this room? Christy raised her hand. We got one honest person over here. We have a few people that are driven to distraction to be perfect. Some of us, not so much. Here it is. I don't remember the guy's name. I'll call him Bill. Bill graduated from college. I was happy for him. Everybody was happy for him. And Bill was one of the few guys at about 24 years old that went right to a church to pastor. And when you go to a church to pastor, in case you don't know, little dumb comments that you make actually hurt. Now, do they hurt me? No. You say, why? Walang puso. I have no heart. You know what they say about a pastor? He has to have three things. You have to have, number one, the mind of a scholar, the heart of a child, and the height of a rhinoceros. I at least have the third one. But my friend went to this church, and he was perfectionistic. Now see, you don't know what perfectionism is. You know this guy right here? He's a quiet perfectionistic guy. Yes, Tim. Which means if Tim comes to the pulpit and he has 5 points, it's going to be really, 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 really hard for him not to speak on all 5 points. Because there's 5 points, I got to tell him. It's perfectionism. Do you know people make stupid comments? Anyhow, my friend, whatever his name was, Bill, Ben, I don't know. His first year in the ministry, he started doing this. Every Sunday morning and every Sunday night, he would write and rewrite his sermon between 5 and 10 times. which starts to drive you what? My friend lasted as a pastor exactly on his first anniversary. He resigned and just walked away from the church because he couldn't handle any imperfections. And let me say this, I love it tonight. I don't know why. I can't tell you why tonight has a better spirit than this morning. This morning we were weird. Tonight we're with it. Why is that? Do you know a perfectionistic person, that would drive them over the edge? Yes. Well, we're going to hurry through the text. This will be helpful for you as you read back through this. I'm not going to spend a lot of time because I want to get to the application. And it's going to be a little different kind of sermon tonight, and that's okay. I say in your notes, let's summarize what happened. David brought back the ark, first of all, after a trial period. You know this, after Uzzah got killed, David was thinking, whoa, I better give this some time. Once he realized that everything was okay, and they'd taken it to this guy's house, and they'd taken it to his home, and God, and some people came and said, David, God's blessing that guy's home, then David said, okay. So David didn't do anything for a while. He gave it a trial period, at least 3 months. I won't read any of the verses. Number two, he brought back the ark, number two, which is very important for biblical Christianity, by the Bible. Remember the first time, how did they bring the ark back? They put it on a cart. There's only one problem. That sounds really good, but God didn't want them to bring a cart. God had chosen a group of the Levites, one portion, that when the ark moved, there were rings in the ark, and they had poles, and they were to put those poles in, guys on the front, guys on the back, and they were supposed to do what? So the second time around, guess how what they did with the ark? Well, let's read. We don't have to pray. We know. It says in verse 13, and it was so that when they, that what? Bear the ark of the Lord. I mean, these people are carrying it. They're doing it by the Bible now. It's no longer making it up as you go along. David's trying to be safe. The two verses, at least two, are in your notes. We don't have to read them. Number three, and this is important. David brought back the ark after a trial period, by the Bible, from the heart. When you read this passage, the thing that you're immediately struck with is these people are engaged in the worship of God. My goodness, everything is, it's almost overwhelming, the energy people are putting into this. Verse 12. And it was told David, saying, the Lord hath blessed the house of Obed-Edom and all that pertaineth unto him because of the ark of God. So David went and brought up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom into the land of David. And it says, with gladness. This is what you see from the heart. We're engaged. Verse 14, David danced before, but again, before the Lord with all his might. This is something from the heart. He's engaged. Verse 15 says, they did it with shouting and with the sound of the trumpet. Verse 16, his wife saw King David leaping and dancing, meaning twirling in the air. I mean, this is something from the heart. So you understand the story. After a trial period, by the Bible, from the heart, next, with great sacrifice and blessing. They did sacrifices the whole way. Verse 13 says, after they had gone six paces, he sacrificed oxen and fatlings. Now, sorry folks, do you know what an oxen is? Have you ever lived on a farm? You just don't kill a few cows because you don't have anything else to do. This is major sacrifice. I actually think it would be good if we could all go back to being farmers for about 5 years. Because when you put your offering in, you don't put your money in, you put your animals in. You really get an idea of what it means to sacrifice. Because it's your living animals. You got 100 new calves, 10 of them belong to God. In this case, he's doing way beyond that. He's bringing in these animals to sacrifice. This was something that he did with sacrifice and blessing. Verse 17, it goes on to say, and David offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. Verse 18, and as soon as David had made the end of offering burnt offerings and peace offerings, he blessed the people. In the name of the Lord of hosts. This comes out of Numbers. You can look that up on your own. You know how the priest was to bless the people. I mean, everything is wonderful to this point. And then it says in verse 19, he dealt to all the people, even among the whole multitude of Israel, as well to women as to men. He gave them food, because this was a fiesta. This was a celebration. This was a time of great rejoicing. It was communal. It was all the people of Israel. Next. my favorite phrase, I will confess to you in this whole passage. And everybody in this room, please look me in the eyes. Everybody in this room knows when you are and when you aren't. Do you understand, Lifnei Yahweh, before, literally before the face of God? You ever see a child or a teenager when they do well? You see the kids up here playing the piano? Sooner or later, those kids are going to look to their parents. They're going to want to know what mom and dad thought of what I just did. Yes or no? Before the Lord means there's only one place you're looking. David did this for the Lord, and he's looking for one person's approval. Who is it? There's no higher thing than this, friend. As a believer, this is high as it gets. When you do something lifnei Yahweh, before the face of the Lord, or before the Lord is the King James, it's the same. But the idea being is, there's only one. You're looking back for that approval. Do we not all do that? You might not look to your parents, but you look to somebody for approval. We need approval. We all need an attaboy. Everybody does. Even the ones that you think don't. They do. We continue. Let's read the verses. David danced before the Lord. It was before the Lord. Verse 16. And his wife saw King David leaping and dancing. This is what's sad. She knew it was being done before the Lord. Verse 17. David offered burnt offerings and peace offerings where? Before the Lord. In David's reply, all of this was done before the Lord. So, in summary of everything that's happened, let me read it all again. David brought back the ark after this trial period by the Bible from the heart with great sacrifice and blessing. All of it was done before the face of God, before the Lord. And lastly, not without criticism. Look at me in the eyes. I'm not asking for sympathy, so I won't talk about myself. My friend here, the only person I know that's just about as impervious to stupid as I am is this guy. But it has bothered him because some people, when we do the best we can do, some real smart individual that can't even get to church on time will tell him it was too long. It was too loud. There were too many awards. There weren't enough awards. We should have given awards too. Are you all listening? Do you know after a while what that does to a leader? A friend of mine that's no longer a pastor, I'm not complaining. A friend of mine told me this last year. I could say his name, but I think it's best that I don't. This man has not been a pastor of a Baptist church in 6 or 7 years. He's about my age. He's a couple years older. I said, how are you doing, brother? How are you, you know, how's your life? How are you feeling? He says, well, I'm in a good church. I preach some. I preach out. I help other churches, he says. But this is what he said. He said, I work half as hard and make twice as much money. Tim Kowak works harder than most people in this room. Not all. And I didn't even have Tim written down. I want to say this. People's dirty little mouths need to be closed. Especially when somebody's doing it before the Lord. Criticism is not nice. And it usually happens from people that don't do anything. They have enough time. You see, you have to have time to criticize. You ever notice when you're working, you don't have time to do that? All right, in your notes, next page. 2 Samuel 6. And this will all be you, because really we're going to ask this question. So you think you can dance? Do you know what I mean by dancing now? I'm talking about, do you think you can give the Lord the very best you have? Well, the real question is, can you give the Lord the very best you have right smack dab in the middle of criticism? That's the question. It says here, Daniel returned to bless his household, and Michael, his daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, in the most snarky, sarcastic way, Well, how glorious was the king of Israel today, who uncovered himself today in the eyes of the handmaidens of his servants as one of the vain fellows, shamelessly uncovered himself. I won't have time to talk about this. I'll just mention this. What strikes me in this little text is, first of all, the depth of the contempt. This was not just criticism. There was a level of contempt. If you don't like the word contempt, you can use the word scorn. You can use the word despising. This word, this passage, that same Hebrew word is found in Genesis 25, where it talks about Esau despised his birthright. Despise is the same word that is found in 2 Samuel, 6:16, when it says, she despised him in her heart. This is a level of contempt. Secondly, under that, it was contempt for obvious good. She was being contemptuous of doing right. That's hard. Next, it was obviously contempt. She wouldn't let go. She wouldn't let go of her contempt. Well, here we go. We have 15 minutes left, and we're going to spend all of them. Concluding thoughts. Are you ready? Please look at me. So you think you can dance? Well, here's what you need to know. Number one, are you ready? You will be criticized. You will be criticized. There's going to be somebody that can do a better job than Rhonda can do. That's the reason they're doing it. Right, Rhonda? I'm asking a question. That's exactly the reason they're helping Rhonda, right? It bothers me when I see someone like Rhonda here and I know she's down Thursday night and I got people criticizing people. By the way, you're going to be criticized. And I'm talking about for good stuff. Hey, it's all right if you're stupid. You get caught robbing a bank. You get caught cheating in your job. You need criticism. You need worse than that. We're talking about good stuff. You're going to be criticized. So you think you can dance? Can you handle the criticism? Answer the question. Can you handle the criticism? My goodness. Number two. This is maybe harder. All of you will be criticized. I don't mean all of you, plural. I mean all of you as an individual. People will criticize everything about you. I'm just going to give you some of the things they can criticize, but I think you could make your own list. Your actions, the A, your actions will be criticized. M, your motives will be criticized. Have you ever had your motives criticized? Friends, I'm pastoring in St. Louis. I have a cop. He's a pervert. He worked his whole career in internal investigations, and I realized how much that perverted him. He used to come up to me after the service. He probably said this to me how many times? 50? Why did you preach that? When I first became a pastor, I'll tell you why I preached that. Somebody has to preach. I don't know anything else. So I preached it. He didn't do anything unless he was twisting things and manipulating things. So he just assumed. By the way, do you know why I'm preaching this sermon tonight? It's actually the next text in 2 Samuel. When you've been asked that question, after a while you feel scuzzy because he thinks, look at me, this cop thought everybody thought like he did. And he always had motives and always had underhanded and always doing things here and, well, I move on. Next, people will criticize your dreams. They will criticize next your hopes. They will criticize next your plans. You plan some things, they're going to criticize it. They will criticize your failures. Are you ready? They will criticize your successes. Which hurts the most, when they criticize your failures or your successes? You know, if you strike out at the plate, that hurts. But if you get a home run and somebody says, well, you could have hit, here you go. You could have hit it further. We won the game. I hit a home run. Yeah. Number three, criticized for your most sacred acts. Everybody look at me. If you criticize me for getting drunk, you're lying. If you criticize me for being lazy, you're lying. Wouldn't bother me because it's not true. What if you criticize me for something that I do that's godly and honorable? That's when it hurts. The most sacred things you can do. I'm not going to spend time with that. I could, but I won't, because I think we have other things to do. Number four, you can be criticized for your position. Criticized for your position. Now, I'm going to say something positive about somebody that's not here. And it would be nice if he would hear about this from somebody other than me. Okay? I came to this church, April. April? Yes, 1996. My first time here was November of 1995. Some of you, most of you, weren't here. In November of 1995, I came here, and I did not really realize that a guy in this church that was a member of this church, a deacon in this church, had just been voted down by this church as the pastor. His name, Rhonda, was Chuck Ells. Now, you guys are not used to people speaking directly, so I'm very direct. When I came here, I know about guys that want to be pastors. They usually cause the pastor trouble. Actually, you read books, you quickly find out they're usually your biggest problem. I came on board in April. By the middle of the summer, Chuck and Shelley were moving. Now, hear me carefully. I still didn't know who they were. I didn't know if he was a typical person or not. Meaning this, he could not accept the fact that I was the pastor of this church and he wasn't. I'm going to say this to you. Chuck Ells impresses me more than almost any man I have ever met, because he was not about any of that. Did you hear what I just said? When I went to St. Louis, my wife won't remember this idiot's name. His name was Brian. His last name was Dull, kind of. You know who I'm talking about. He was voted down for being pastor in St. Louis before I got there. Are you all listening? I've told this story. I go to St. Louis in 1988. I get there. We candidate in the spring. When I get there, the week before, this church, St. Louis Church, LifeGate, had a bus route that went to Eureka, picked kids up, and brought them to church. The week before I got there, they went to Eureka, they brought the kids to church. The week I came, another church sent their bus by Brian Dull and his friends, and they went to Eureka and took the kids to the other church. You say, what about the pastor? Well, he was a criminal too. Brian Dull came to five or six sermons at funerals. Every time I did a funeral sermon, he would come, he would greet people, and the moment I got up to speak, he would leave. He demonstrated exactly what's going on here. They don't like people in a position they think they should have. Look me in the eyes. Chuck Ells is exactly the opposite. Chuck Ells was never interested in a position. He was interested in serving the Lord. And he's demonstrated that for 23 years. Do you know how rare that is? Yes or no? Most people want to be the big shot. Chuck wants to serve, and by the way, and has very successfully. I can say to you today, he's one of my best friends. And he just amazes me. How do you find a guy that's not interested in himself? He's just interested in the Lord. Has he had an easy life? Oh my goodness, he's gone through some problems. His wife, gone through health problems that most of us can't imagine. And he's still positive. Chuck never sleeps over 4 hours a day. Not because he's pious. He has to help his wife. And he has to help his wife do everything. She has to go to the bathroom by being put up in a contraption, and gravity takes care of matters. And Chuck takes care of that 7 days a week, 365 days a year, for the last 3 or 4 years. Y'all listening, I will say this. If I took Brian Dull, that's not exactly his name. He is an arrogant, pompous idiot. He's never pastored, by the way, in the 30 years I've been in the ministry. Chuck Ells is a man after God's own heart, and frankly, I'd like to be like him, because he gets serving the Lord, not looking for a position. That's my sermonette tonight. Let me ask you, are you happy when somebody gets promoted over you in the Navy? This morning, they're not here, they're at a wedding. Lourdes and David are at a wedding. Lourdes told me this morning, her son in the United States Air Force, which is very difficult, just made E7. 12 years. That's not exciting, is it? Well, I think it is. Number five. I don't even need to say this one. Criticized unfairly. By the way, if criticism was fair, it wouldn't bother you, would it? You know, if you're stealing and lying and thieving and sleeping, you know, you don't mind. But if it's unfair, that's when it hurts. Number six. And we could spend hours talking about this one because I think in most cases, criticism comes from this. This is Ralph Warren's way of saying it. Criticize for A. Look what you did, David. You were uncovered. You were trying to impress the ladies. You look like a fool. Criticize for A when in reality, B, C, D. I don't think I have this all in there. It's not all. It's really, there's a word missing. When it is really about, excuse me, about, Frenchie, you didn't get that word in there. It's really about B, C, D, or a distant Z. Most of the time, criticism isn't about what we're talking about. What is criticism about here? Do you think she was criticizing the ark? No. How about David's dancing ability? No. How about that he didn't wear clothing? No. How about that he was doing it before the Lord? It wasn't any of those. I think it was some of these. But by the way, she's not going to go up there and say, the reason I'm criticizing you is all these reasons. She goes right to the heart of David and mocks the things he was doing before the Lord. It was probably about things like this in your notes. It was about how David won and not Saul. Or about her previous husband that she was still angry about, I'm sure. Or about her lack of status. You know, there was a time she was the only one. And now how many wives did David have? And how important was she? You got the point. See, we're in something now that when the criticism comes out, it isn't about A, it's about B, C, D, or probably Z. And oftentimes when people are criticizing, as a Christian, besides telling people to shut up, sometimes you need to say, well, what's this really about? It's really about the person's problem, not about David. David wasn't perfect. Next in your notes. It might have been about her lack of status. It also might have been this. And this doesn't make me happy, but for you that were here a month ago, you know the sermon. It might have been about her having been used as a pawn. How did Saul use her? How? As a pawn. How did David use her? When he wanted to unite the kingdoms? Well, I'm not going to do this unless you bring her back. It's probably about that. In many ways, it might have been this. It might have been about her never being treated as a woman should be treated. I think David did use her. I know Saul used her, and that's tragic. Now, folks, we now come to the conclusion of tonight. I have said that you will be criticized. All of you will be criticized. You will be criticized for your most sacred acts. Criticized for your position. Criticized unfairly. Criticized for A when it's really about B, C, D, whatever. And lastly, criticism that cuts deeper than it should have. I always think, when I think of this text, please look at me, I'm almost done. My friend, he was a nice guy, a gentle guy, not a bad guy, too perfectionistic. Perfectionism can kill you when somebody then goes after your heart. He made it in the ministry 1 year. Not because he was bad, not because he was evil. He actually listened to people's criticism. My favorite criticism is this. I walk into church on Sunday morning. We have two or three stumbler bumblers. That's what I call them. They stumble bumble into me, and they say intelligent things like, there's no toilet paper in the toilet. My first thought is, why didn't you put some in there? Hey, hello. Or they say, the parking lot's not clean. Well, go clean it. By the way, you get tired of stumbler bumblers. Now, here's the problem. Listen. You can overreact to criticism. And guess what I think David did? I think she came to him, stuck the dagger in, right at the wrong time, when he was giving his heart and soul, stuck the dagger in, and guess what happened? David overreacted. I don't know what all this means, but it doesn't sound good to me. Read with me. David said unto Michal, it was before the Lord. The next thing out of his mouth is, this has got to hurt. I'm going to paraphrase this. You know, God chose me and not your dad. And by the way, God chose me and not your house. And God chose me to be ruler over all the people of Israel. Therefore, I'm going to play before the Lord. And then this last statement scares me. I will yet be more vile than thus. I will even be base in my own sight. Properly translated as opposed to the ESV. And of the maidservants which thou hast spoken of them shall I be had in honor. That all sounds bad, but here's the conclusion. Please look at me. David is about to move on to the highest point in David's life, the Davidic covenant in the story. And right before you get there, David receives the first blade. Uzzah is killed by God. And look at me, it's in the notes, I'm not going to read it. David himself names this place Perez Uzzah unto this day. So David and everybody can remember, God made a breach on Uzzah. Then the second time he's bringing the ark, and everything goes well, and he gets the ark to Jerusalem, and God is blessing. The dagger to the heart. This time it says, what does it say? What does it say? Michal never had any children. Look at me, the bitterness that begins in a man's heart. I'm not going to have anything to do with you, woman. But he started having things to do with other women. And it caught up with him. So I'm going to ask you a question. It's the question we started with. What's the question? What are we talking about dancing? We're talking about giving God your all. Are you ready to do that? Just remember something. Some little bumbler stumbler. Hey, look up here. Some little bumbler stumbler. You preached the greatest sermon since the Apostle Paul. Right in the heart. You say, why? Because people like to criticize. They especially like to criticize when they don't want you looking at them. So you think you can dance? I ask you a question. Do you think so? Can you do so when people criticize you? Nina, I love you. You know that. How can you not love Nina? You don't do well with criticism. Especially if I said something to you. I bet I could make you cry. Would I do it? Well, you know I wouldn't do it. Because I like you too much. But you know what? Somebody else might. So you think you can dance? I hope so. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this.